Recently, a small group of volunteers and aerospace engineers seized control of the International Sun-Earth Explorer 3 satellite, which was launched by NASA in 1978 and then abandoned. Through crowdfunding and after getting the blessing of the government, the group was able to construct a makeshift mission control in an abandoned McDonald's in Mountain View, California, where they made contact with the obsolete spacecraft. And we are joined now by Dennis Wingo, CEO of Sky Corp and one of the project leaders of the IC3 reboot project. Welcome to our show.
Well, thank you for having me today.
Where did the idea to contact? Are we calling it the IC3?
Well, we use that as ISEE, but we say IC. The idea came from in February of this year. There was an article in the Planetary Society, one of the science publications, saying that this spacecraft was coming back to the Earth, and NASA said it was going to be impossible to talk to, so we're just going to watch it go by. And I started thinking, why is it impossible? And then we took off from there.
What was its original mission?
The original mission of the spacecraft is what we call heliophysics, which is the study of the sun. It was the very first spacecraft to be at a point about a million miles closer to the sun than the Earth is, and it studied the solar flares, galactic cosmic rays, radio waves coming from the sun, all of these things that now we call space weather.
Did NASA eventually abandon the satellite because it had done its job?
Well, not exactly. The spacecraft did its job for 3 years at that location, and then Dr. Robert Farquhar, who was the leader of that project, came up with this amazingly innovative way of sending the spacecraft around the moon and around the Earth, and it went by a comet in 1985, the first spacecraft ever to do that. And then it studied the sun for several years, but then NASA started launching newer satellites, and they just quit talking to it. But they always knew, and they put it on course to come back to the Earth this year.
And why would you even want to contact an obsolete satellite that had a very specific mission?
Well, a couple of things. I actually grew up as a kid as a ham radio operator, and so I knew about this spacecraft for most of my life because if you're a ham radio operator, you study the sun and sunspots to know about radio waves.
But Radio Shack no longer carries those kinds of things that would allow...
Yeah, well, much to their chagrin, I think, these days, but... why we did it is a couple of things. One is to show that we could. The second is that there's a lot of value in studying a spacecraft that is this old for NASA. And to be able to put it back into operation for science, for STEM education, which is science, technology, engineering, and math, and also to educate the general public about why space weather is important to us.
Is there any new science that you could pursue by using the IC3?
We already have. We have some of the original project scientists from the NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory, the University of Iowa, and also from the Netherlands. And we've been able to detect the solar magnetic field, the magnetosphere, different things. And since this spacecraft's on a little different course than all the others, its observations are complementary to. And since the sun is in kind of a funk, it's completely different in the way that it kind of radiates as it was in 1980. We are getting good new science.
How did the team come together? You had a crowdfunding, didn't you?
Yep.
Go ahead.
Yeah, NASA in April said, we're not going to do this. We give you guys permission to go for it. And I have a small team of people that work for me. And then we started the crowdfunding, and it was amazing. It was non-space geeks. Usually in something like this, you get a bunch of space geeks. They'll get together, a couple of rich guys, they'll give you money. We did that last year, but this year it was all people from around the world and small donations. And I think it captured the public imagination, not only that we were trying to do something that no private organization had ever done, only governments, but that we were doing it in our McDonald's.
So we have a couple of abandoned things here. We have an abandoned satellite, an abandoned McDonald's. why was that McDonald's abandoned?
Well, it's on the Moffett Naval Air Station, which is a decommissioned Navy base, and that's really the only place you'll find an abandoned McDonald's, because the corporation, they usually, you know, they'll tear down the building and sell the land, but this one they didn't own, and so it was available, and the NASA Center Director, Dr. Warden, he supports innovative stuff. He says, hey, I've got this abandoned building, and we took it over.
What kinds of technical challenges did you need to overcome to first make contact with the satellite?
Well, 30 years ago, everything related to talking to the satellite was made out of hardware. There were radios and demodulators and all this different equipment. Well, NASA threw all that equipment away in 1999, and that was the principal reason, one of the principal reasons they weren't going to do this. So we recreated, using very state-of-the-art technology, what's called a software-defined radio. Your cell phone is a software-defined radio, meaning that you have software that does the work that hardware used to do. And so we had to, in a very short period of time, put all that back together. And then to make it work, we picked the largest telescope in the world down in Puerto Rico at Arecibo to transmit to the spacecraft.
What was the feeling when you first made contact with the satellite? Were you surprised, or did you expect it to all work out?
Well, the spacecraft had been transmitting a carrier signal ever since NASA quit talking to it in the 90s, so we knew that that part was working. And this was what we had found out in February. A German dish had heard it talking, not talking, but transmitting, and so we knew that part worked. And there's redundant receivers, so we had a pretty good idea that we were going to be able to do this. But, you know, we all did the happy dance when we actually were able to command it in what's called engineering mode when it started sending us back telemetry.
Well, you were able to contact the satellite, but I understand that there's been some trouble with the propulsion system. What happened there?
We were able to verify the health, the solar arrays were good, all the electronics were good. You got to understand, this spacecraft doesn't have a computer. It's a completely dumb spacecraft. But we verified everything was working. We did an initial propulsion maneuver that worked. But what we found out is that the nitrogen, just like if you have a kid and you have these little water rockets, you have to pump it up with air. Well, the pumping up with air part didn't work, so it doesn't matter how much water you have in the rocket, or in this case, hydrazine, with no pressure, it just didn't work.
And I get the sense from what you're saying that my cell phone actually has more sophisticated computing power than the satellite does.
By a factor of at least 100,000. This is all very, very Radio Shack kind of parts from the 1970s, but it was state-of-the-art at the time, and that was one of the reasons NASA had gone on to newer stuff, because they can get more out of newer spacecraft.
Is there any way to get the propulsion working again, or get it into Earth orbit?
Well, it's coming back in 15 years, and we're going to be analyzing all the data. We know that the propulsion, the hydrazine, the liquid propellant is still there, and we have people analyzing that. We have some top experts, and we did this crowdsourcing. We had a problem, and we said, hey, we have a problem, and people from all over the world that were experts came in and helped us. So there is a chance in 15 years that we might be able to have a workaround to be able to do this.
Aren't there many other abandoned satellites floating around up there? Are you going to try to seize some of them convert them from space junk into something usable?
Well, it's a very interesting idea, and the answer is a qualified yes, in that we know that there are some out there, some that are doing heliophysics. And for teaching young engineers and students about how to deal with the spacecraft, how to actually operate them, I'm old school. My great grandfather was an apprentice in a railroad yard for 10 years before they ever let him touch anything. And so I believe in hands-on education. And so the answer is yes, and we're going to do that with young people, young engineers, and students.
NASA has gone through major budget cuts, and the shuttle program is over. But I get the sense that the public is still interested in space. You think more DIY projects like this will be happening in the future?
Well, you know, I think that, and NASA thinks that as well. Dr. John Grunsfeld, who is the Associate Administrator for Science, specifically, we put together our written agreement with NASA, specifically looking into the future with opportunities for this, for other spacecraft like Opportunity Rover on Mars or the Lunar Orbiter that's there now, to have universities, foundations, private entities be able to take over these spacecraft, because NASA usually designs something to last 5 years. Okay, they have a budget for that. But sometimes these things last 10, 15, 20, 30 years. So it makes sense to be able to turn these over to other organizations so that the benefits of education and stuff happen. So the answer is yes.
And NASA is very supportive. We have a link to live tracking of the satellite. My great thanks. That's at our website. My great thanks to Dennis Wingo, CEO of SkyCorp, for talking with us today.